Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Unions, they're making a difference in the pandemic, along with the politics leading up to the White House. Meanwhile, nurses say, hey, don't rush that vaccine. And today on the show, the latest from the diabetes doc and the United Auto Workers. Good afternoon and welcome to the Thursday, September 10th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast. You can follow us there, AWF Union Podcast. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to kick things off in about 10, 15 minutes with Dr. Camillo Ricordi of the Diabetes Research Institute out of the University of Miami. Do check out this website, diabetesresearch.org. Dr. Ricordi, he's been on the show, well, at least once, and we're bringing him back. He is a professor of surgery, distinguished professor of medicine, biomedical engineering, microbiology, immunology, all this at the University of Miami, Florida, where he serves as director of the Diabetes Research Institute. Now, this is the institute that opened its doors back in 1994, state-of-the-art facility, built 100% union, and is now recognized as the most advanced research center of its kind. All focused on finding a cure for diabetes. And this is all put together by the North American Building Trades Unions. Back in the late 80s, 1987, they decided to raise some money for the Diabetes Research Institute. And Dr. Ricordi has done amazing work because of the union funding of the Diabetes Research Institute. We're going to talk about a new major paper on a clinical trial that he's been working on with stem cells for diabetes as well as COVID-19. We touched on this the last time we had him on the show. And like I said, this all ties in with the building trades. And as you know, probably you should know by now, the Dad's Day shoot is this Saturday. We had Dorsey Hager on the show talking about it last Friday. And this is an annual event for sportsmen. And the money raised goes to the Diabetes Research Institute. Dr. Ricordi is going to talk about the surge of epidemics like obesity, autoimmune diseases, and now you got this pandemic and what we can do to protect ourselves. Dangerous world today in so many different fronts, and he's right in the middle of it, trying to make life better for so many people. You know, a couple of years ago, they figured that 24 million Americans are suffering from diabetes. And there's various types. There's type 1, type 2. There's gestational diabetes. My daughter had that while she was pregnant, and often it goes away after a pregnancy. It's just short term. But according to a report, now this is a report going back 10 years ago. One out of three adults, so what, 33% of the people in this country could be diagnosed with diabetes by the year 2050. Wow. Got to get a handle on it. No doubt about that. Josh Nassar will be joining us later in the broadcast. He is a legislative coordinator for the United Auto Workers, UAW.org is a website. We're going to talk about the COVID-19 response by the administration, or lack thereof. The legislative fix. We have that proposal by the Republicans, watered down proposal, stimulus package that would give people, what, $300 a week in unemployment benefits? Previously, the CARES Act allowed double that amount, some money for schools. And there may be a vote on that today. The Democrats say it's just not enough, just not enough. What's going on with Social Security? President Trump has suspended the payroll tax until the end of the year. And he said that he will suspend it or get rid of it altogether if he is reelected. Now, keep in mind, this is what funds Social Security. The crazy thing about this, a lot of companies are not taking it out of workers' paychecks. It's too complicated because it's only a temporary thing. And right now, it's what, 6.2% that you pay, and then your employer pays the other 6.2%. Right now, if that comes out of your paycheck, you still owe it January 1. So you'll be paying double. Okay? It's all smoke and mirrors. All smoke and mirrors. Sounds a bit confusing, but Josh is going to explain that. I want to drive you to the UAW website again. It's uaw.org. There's a really, really good posting by Rory Gamble. Rory is the president of the UAW, and it's his Labor Day message. And he starts out by thanking everybody. He said, this year has been utterly unprecedented, and we had to deal with extraordinary challenges. I want to recognize the hard work and courage of my UAW family in facing this terrible pandemic and working to keep one another safe. He pointed out that Labor Day is a day we celebrate and recognize the spirit, the strength, and life-changing contributions of working men and women all across the nation. It is the voice, the sacrifice, and the willingness to give up that defines our labor movement and our union. So I would like to remind all of us that it is labor that built America and America's middle class. It is labor that has brought us fair wages, health care benefits, retirement, health and safety standards, a voice in the workplace, and so much more. It is labor that stands up to social and civil injustice. And it was the working men and women of this nation that stepped up when our country was in need of critical, life-saving, personal protective equipment. And he goes on to say how the auto workers and the auto plants converted rapidly, almost overnight, to make the ventilators, which were so badly needed. Really good posts. You definitely want to check that out. Rory Gamble, president of the United Auto Workers. Well, you know, Labor Day and this whole week marks off the political season, although it's been going on a long time. But there's a lot of politicians making speeches, and one of them is Kamala Harris, the U.S. senator and vice presidential nominee. Now, she visited, and there was some media play on this the other day. On Labor Day, she visited an area in Wisconsin. They weren't very specific in the national media. They said she went to Wisconsin. Well, you know where she went? The IBEW Local 494 Training Center in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. This was right on Monday, Labor Day. She toured the facility, learn more about the work that the union is doing to train the next generation of workers. She spoke with Michelle Robinson of the local union, who explained the training and continuing education apprentices receive. Dean Warsh is the business manager and financial secretary of the local. Again, this is Local 494. And Dean led the tour of the training center's lighting controls lab, the transformers and motors lab, as well as the low voltage information and technology lab. Also joining Kamala Harris, Wisconsin State AFL-CIO President Stephanie Bloomingdale. And they highlighted the great work union members are doing to build our middle class and power our communities through the COVID-19 pandemic. We are honored. This is a statement from Bloomingdale. We are honored to have the next vice president of the United States visit a union training facility in Wisconsin for the IBEW Local 494 on Labor Day. She said, when unions are strong, America's strong. No doubt about that. No doubt about that. Lee Saunders, who's president of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, wrote an editorial this week for the Sacramento Bee explaining how public service workers have met the pandemic crisis head on. This is what he wrote. Public service workers have answered the call in our community's hour of most desperate need, putting the health and safety of their neighbors first. They have done so under the most difficult and dangerous conditions, often without personal protective equipment, even when it meant exposing themselves and their families to risk. Now, if only some politicians in Washington had half the courage. Instead, a majority of U.S. senators has shown callous indifference by refusing to pass a stimulus bill that will throw a lifeline to working families and communities. With the COVID-19 death toll approaching 200,000 and the economy in meltdown, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, President Trump's most reliable enabler, is choosing, in his words, to push the pause button. It's Lee Saunders, president of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And one more story, and this involves the nurses. The nation's top registered nurses union, National Nurses United, is warning that a rush to market on an anti-coronavirus vaccine this year, right around the time of the November election, would be a dangerous experiment on the American people. Any vaccine against COVID-19 must undergo rigorous tests for public safety, and its unveiling must not be subject to political considerations, the union warned. National Nurses United, responding to media reports and horn blowing from the White House that a vaccine might be ready by late October or early November. This is a comment from the co-president of the union, Zenny Cortez, an RN. Any vaccine that's developed and widely distributed must undergo a full scientific evaluation. With almost 190,000 U.S. lives lost to COVID-19, under a president and administration that left people exposed and dying, even when known prevention measures are available, as other nations have proven are in place, placing an insufficiently tested product on the market will surely look like a dangerous experiment on the American people. That comment from Gene Ross, who is president of the NNU. Nurses have good reason to doubt the government. The Oval Office occupant first denied the coronavirus was a threat to the U.S., then predicted it would quickly disappear. And all that's coming out now. I don't know if you caught the audio tapes from Bob Woodward, who, along with Carl Bernstein, brought down Richard Nixon during the Watergate affair. And in those tapes, Trump admitted that COVID-19 was bad. But he didn't want to tell everybody about it because it would cause a panic in the country. So he downplayed it. Great leadership, huh? All right, we have to take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce. We'll be back with Dr. Camillo Ricordi from the Diabetes Research Institute right here on America's Workforce. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output, a half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. And don't forget, we're available on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify. And we ask that you please subscribe to our podcast network, give us a rating, and we would appreciate a good rating. 5 stars would be greatly appreciated. Well, we certainly appreciate the research being done on diabetes. Like I indicated a few minutes ago, this is a disease. It doesn't take a vacation. Once you have diabetes, it stays with you, and a lot of people succumb to it over the years. And there's various types of diabetes. We're going to get into it, and there's a lot of good research going on. Research funded by the Building Trades of America. Let's go to line number one right now and join, once again, Dr. Camillo Ricordi of the Diabetes Research Institute based at the University of Miami in Florida. The website is diabetesresearch.org, and he's here to bring us up to speed on the battle for a cure to diabetes. Dr. Ricordi, welcome back to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello, and thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, I guess there's a new paper coming out, and you're not at liberty to get into details, but maybe you can share a little bit of information. I mean, you've been doing a whole lot on diabetes research, and some of that, because we're in the middle of this pandemic, is spilling over to COVID-19. All right, I want to tease you a little bit. What can you tell us right now about this paper soon to be published?
Well, I can say that we were involved with diabetes research using these stem cells to treat diabetes and to block the progression of complication and try to halt autoimmunity. These are so-called mesenchymal stem cells obtained from the umbilical cord of newborn healthy baby. So when the mother, instead of throwing away the placenta, the cord blood, and the umbilical cord after delivery of the baby, one umbilical cord can be used to expand these very immature progenitor stem cells, and they can, from one newborn, you can obtain therapeutic doses to treat over 10,000 patients. So it's a unique resource of very young cells that have very strong immunomodulatory and anti-inflammatory properties. So they have been already used for over a decade to treat type 1 diabetes subjects to see in a pilot randomized trial if they could protect from the complication of diabetes or halt the progression of autoimmunity in type 1 diabetes. So when COVID exploded, we contacted our collaborators internationally and then and saying, why don't you use them in COVID-19? Because these cells go naturally to the lung. And if you inject them IV, they go naturally to the lung. So in diabetes, for example, we have to do interventional radiology to place them to the pancreatic artery, or in kidney disease, you have to go to the renal artery. But in the case of COVID-19, it's just an IV infusion from a vein, peripheral vein, who deliver the cells right where you need them in the lung. So that's how this trial started. We asked FDA permission, and we obtained a very quick response to begin a randomized controlled trial. And this was recently concluded, and we just submitted the paper very recently, so that I hope this will be published in the next few weeks. And you can fasten your seatbelts if you wish, because I think you will be pleased with the results.
I'm fastening them right now. Okay, this is great stuff. So, Dr. Ricordi, how did this evolve here? Because of the pandemic, your research changed in the middle of all this and decided to go and try to find some type of cure for COVID-19 here? And how does this compare to like a vaccine?
Well, the research didn't change, and our focus has remained all the time on a cure of type 1 diabetes and a cure of diabetes. But when the pandemic emerged, we found ourselves with the ability to help in this emergency situation and try to save lives also for COVID-19. So the production of this cell that is in this good manufacturing facility that are FDA regulated and for the highest level human cell product production, we just shifted and increased the production thanks to the support also from NAPTO to be a resource, an immediate resource to try to save life in COVID-19. That's why we started this trial. But we kept the focus. We have major clinical trial coming up in diabetes to try to cure diabetes, both with stem cell-derived insulin-producing cells and with new immunomodulatory molecules that may replace the standard immunosuppression. So we have major initiative going forward in diabetes as well. And the interesting thing is that what we have found is that some of the risk factors for development of autoimmune disease and diabetes are the same risk factor that may involve in developing the most severe form of COVID-19. So now we're developing this international collaborative project that is called Fit for Pandemic, that you can find also on www.fit4andpandemic.com. That is, how can we try to shift the human population to become asymptomatic or to have mild form of viral disease and become sort of fit or like trained to resist, like a little like bats are. That, as you know, bats can get infected by these terrible viruses, but they don't develop the disease.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing what you're doing down there. Let's zero in on your diabetes research, and what you have done is phenomenal right now. Maybe you can explain to our listeners this Diabetes Research Institute, the DRI BioHub strategy. It's all posted on your website, but I'd like to get your take on that. How essentially is that working?
Well, practically, we're developing a biologic cure for diabetes that is including the use of insulin-producing cells that have to be delivered safely in a site that is engineered to be optimal for the long-term survival of these insulin-producing cells. But we're also working to make sure that we will have enough supply of these cells to treat all the people with diabetes, because as you know, there are 430 million subjects with diabetes worldwide, and even though this is primarily targeting type 1 diabetes, it could help hundreds of millions of type 2 diabetic subjects, because even with type 2 diabetes at the beginning, you can handle with oral agents and drugs, but then eventually you exhaust the reserve of insulin-producing cells and you may benefit from an infusion of insulin-producing cells. So the BioHub strategy is like to deliver a biologic cure in the absence of immunosuppressive drugs that introduce some of the complications that can be related to chronic use of immunosuppressive drugs. But despite the use of immunosuppressive drugs, we just presented recently at the American Diabetes Association Congress this year, the fact that the 20-year survival of subjects transplanted with islets, with the pancreatic insulin-producing cells, have been spectacular and has been 20-year survival has been 85% versus what has been reported in the same age group, that is 59% in subjects with diabetes just treated with insulin. So that if you see in adults, this is something you couldn't do in children, of course, right now, because the immunosuppression wouldn't be indicated. But in adult subjects of around 40, 45 years of age, islet transplantation can be already considered something that doesn't affect lifespan, at least for 20 years, and it's been a tremendous result that will give a big push to the field going forward.
All right, Doctor, I have to take a quick break here. You can stay with us for another segment here. I got some more questions for you, okay?
Yeah.
All right, Dr. Camillo Ricordi. He is the director of the Diabetes Research Institute based out of the University of Miami. You want to get some more information, especially what he just talked about, that biohub strategy. It's really well laid out on the website there, diabetesresearch.org, diabetesresearch.org. And once again, this research is being funded by the North American Building Trades. And you heard me talk about this Dad's Day shoot, which is actually in Columbus, Ohio, this Saturday. That money has been going to the Diabetes Research Institute for several decades now. And in fact, over the last 27 years, the Research Institute has gotten from the building trades $48 million. We'll talk about that next on the show. Also, later in the broadcast, Josh Nasser will be speaking on behalf of the United Auto Workers, one of our great sponsors here on the show. Back in a few minutes. Once again, you're listening to America's Workforce.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to America's Workforce. Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. You can follow us there. Let's go back to our live line. Rejoin Dr. Camillo Ricordi of the Diabetes Research Institute based out of the University of Miami. Again, this is an operation that is 100% union-built facility. The DRI opened its doors in 1994, and the building trades, the North American Building Trades Unions, have been raising money through their Dad's Day program, Dollars Against Diabetes, since 1987, and as I indicated, $48 million. Since that time has been raised. So you got some friends in labor here, Dr. Ricordi. I mean, they really like what you're doing out down there. And my guess is a lot of this research would not be happening if it wasn't for everything that the trades are doing. Am I correct in assuming that?
Yeah, they've been a fantastic partner, the building trades. And it's actually the reason I moved from the University of Pittsburgh, where we just finished the first successful trial of transplantation of insulin-producing cells for treatment of diabetes in 1990 when I heard and I was recruited in Miami because the building trades were building this fantastic institute with an ability to collaborate worldwide, open access, and truly try to make a difference in the fight towards the cure of diabetes. So they've been spectacular. They've been our partner, and the reason I moved to Miami, and the reason we were able to do all of this incredible research, not only in Miami, but with collaborators all over North America and worldwide.
Well, something's got to be done, and there's a lot of people suffering from diabetes. There's a type 1, type 2, there's gestational diabetes, and the numbers, the projections are astronomical if we don't get a handle on this. I want to talk about this this recent surge of epidemics like obesity. I mean, there's definitely a tie in there. autoimmune diseases. I think the last time I spoke with you, I indicated that I have two daughters suffering from multiple sclerosis. And it's interesting you bring up the stem cells because they're doing the same thing there. They're implanting stem cells in people with chronic conditions of MS. And they're seeing them turn around. It's amazing what's going on here. I'm just wondering, what can we do to protect ourselves? I mean, we live in scary times in so many different ways. Do you have any advice for our listeners right now, Doctor?
Well, what we're finding is not proven by randomized prospective large trials, but what we're finding are some elements that are really indicative that there is a situation, a baseline situation that may be in common between the autoimmune epidemic or the severe reaction that some people have to viral infections such as COVID-19. So this is a base. What we are finding is that both type 1 diabetic subjects and people developing the most severe form of COVID-19 have very low level of vitamin D, but they also have an inflammation marker in the blood that is a test that you can do very easily, like every Quest lab can do, that is called AA over EPA, that is sort of a ratio between omega-6 and omega-3 in your blood that is diet-related. And this inflammation test, AA/EPA, can give you an indication of what degree of inflammation you have in your blood that is related to the diet, and this can predispose you to develop both autoimmune disease condition or severe reaction to viral infections. And we have now this international collaboration and this website where we try to inform patients on what could be done and the general population, not just patients, to protect yourself. That is called www.fitforpandemic.com. And we are exposing all these natural factors that could be taken to try to protect ourselves and become more like trained to resist this kind of evolution. You know, diabetes, like type 1, is the minority of diabetes, is like 5% of diabetes. But if you consider, it's also the tip of the iceberg of the autoimmune epidemic that represents like around 100 disease condition, autoimmune disease condition, that affect 20% of the American population. So it's actually autoimmunity, and the autoimmune epidemic is even bigger than the diabetes epidemic overall. But we found that there is a common thread between the predisposition to autoimmunity, predisposition of a strong viral reaction, and also the development of age-related chronic disease condition like neurodegenerative obesity, diabetes, in general. So it's a very interesting research that is bringing together the field of viral diseases and autoimmunity and chronic disease.
Mm-hmm. You said the word diet a couple of times in your response. Is that probably the best takeaway from this interview? People have to watch what they're putting into their body. It's going to make a difference. Is that what I'm hearing,
Definitely.
Doctor?
Yeah, definitely, like diet is a critical component, but not always just diet can help you protect yourself. Because, like, for example, you could say instead of taking omega-3, you can just eat a lot of fish. But then sometimes when you eat fish, you have to be careful because, like in Florida, there are several fishes that they say you cannot eat more than once a month or one every 2 weeks because of the contamination. So you have to be careful to have what is the source of the food that you take. So we know that, for example, a Mediterranean diet is good for your health in general, but you have to be very careful because now we are not only what we eat, but we are also what the animal that we eat. So that if the feed of of animals, and you should go more like with fish rather than red meat, for example, you have to avoid some of the refined vegetable oils that have these inflammatory factors, like arachidonic acid. But you have to be careful. A little is a challenge because when you go to a grocery store now, is like going to a minefield. You have to be careful what product you can get. Have they been treated with antibiotics, with growth factors, with additives? And so to try to eat like a healthy diet and look at the portion control is definitely something that can help, especially for obesity and type 2 diabetes, where it has been shown that diet and lifestyle intervention can be even better than drugs like metformin to prevent the development of diabetes. So diet is central for sure to the development of diabetes and a lot of these chronic disease conditions.
Mm-hmm. Are you big on vitamins? You mentioned that a lot of people have low levels of vitamin D, especially in dealing with COVID-19. What's your take on,
yeah, well,
on vitamin intake?
We definitely have now a very strong indication that if you have low vitamin D levels, you can develop not only the most severe form of COVID-19, but also in diabetes, has been presented at the World Congress last year, that the level of vitamin D are also correlated with mortality in diabetes. So if you have low vitamin D levels, can also be a risk factor for severe complication and mortality in diabetes. And there are more and more data emerging from other disease conditions as well. So the thing is, like, we cannot prescribe or say for sure vitamin will save humankind. But if you say, what are we taking to protect ourselves when we are in the front line on the barricades, yeah, in the intensive care units, is like, definitely, I'm taking like vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, and also there is this new class of polyphenols that are protective factors like pterostilbene, resveratrol, that are coming out also very strong. There is just an article that came out in Nature on how there are natural substances that can help you protect from viral infections. So this is all describing the fit for pandemic in detail, so I don't want to waste your time here, but there are definitely ways that you can help us protect ourselves taking some protective substances, including vitamin D and vitamin C.
Good advice. Well, Dr. Ricordi, we're just about out of time. I thank you for what you're doing down there at the University of Miami. And there's more money coming your way. The Dad's Day shoot is going to be in Columbus, Ohio this weekend. As you know, it was postponed due to the pandemic. It was supposed to be in June. So there's going to be a couple, at least $100,000, maybe $150,000 coming your way. And that's just from the Columbus Central Ohio building trade. So you keep up the great work, and we'll do our best here on America's Workforce to keep funding you, okay?
Thank you. Like, it's amazing your effort, and the effort of the building trades has been our best partner, and we couldn't be here trying to fight this disease without their help. It's been really amazing, and I thank every single person contributing to that state in Ohio and nationwide. It's been a tremendous effort.
Well, you keep it up, okay? And please keep in touch with us, all right?
Definitely, anytime.
Once again, that's Dr. Camillo Ricordi out of the Diabetes Research Institute in the University of Miami. Diabetesresearch.org. And by the way, his Twitter handle is at Camillo Ricordi. That's R-I-C-O-R-D-I, at Camillo Ricordi. All right, quick break. When we come back, Josh Nasser on behalf of the United Auto Workers. Once again, you're listening to America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output, a 500,000 strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And welcome back to America's Workforce, where we're available on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify, and our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two right now. Welcome back to the show, Mr. Josh Nasser, Legislative Coordinator for the United Auto Workers, one of the many proud sponsors of America's Workforce. You might have heard him for about, 30 seconds or maybe 45 seconds. This was on Monday's show, special Labor Day show, where we featured Rich Trumka, president of the Labor Federation, and various guests on the show. Hey, Josh, welcome back. Thanks for joining us. And how was your Labor Day, by the way?
Labor Day was great. It's great to join you today. I mean, it was really a, it's too bad we only have one day a year to really to talk about, where the whole country focuses on the sacrifice that workers make every day to make our country what it is, and also all the issues that we have at stake right now. So, it was a great day, and I think that we're optimistic about the future here. So.
Yeah. I read a statement from your president, Rory Gamble, at the top of the show, and I urge our listeners to go to the website, uaw.org, and read what he said about Labor Day. Very, very profound. We appreciate that. And we always talk on the show about the union difference. Kamala Harris, Joe Biden's vice presidential nominee, was at a UAW hall in Wisconsin on Labor Day. All right? And that needs to be pointed out because the mainstream media will just say, oh, she's in Wisconsin. Well, where was she? She was at a union hall in Wisconsin. And yesterday, where was Joe Biden, Josh? Where did he show up yesterday?
He was in Warren, Michigan at a UAW Region 1 headquarters talking about a plan to really tackle this offshoring, which has really plagued American workers in our country for a long time, and making Buy America, Buy American, meaningful by closing loopholes. He was talking about issues that are directly relevant to building, a stronger future here in the U.S., and we were encouraged by it.
Yeah, it's amazing, the union difference. And not afraid to go to union facilities and talk about what unions do in America. A big contrast to what we're experiencing right now. By the way, did you hear the latest from Bob Woodward on the response with Donald Trump? And this was right on tape. That he said, well, I didn't want anybody to get into a panic, so I downplayed the corona response. What's your reaction to that, Josh?
It really just points to the fact that what's still needed to this day. Because I want to point out that it's not like this pandemic has subsided. I mean, there are people getting sick daily, and we're leading the world in fatalities by far with only 4% of the population. We need a national strategy, a national plan. The whole thing of the kind of, asking governors to deal with it and having states compete for each other against for emergency resources, that's not how we should go forward. We need to have a national plan. Vice President Biden, has put out plans to really tackle this, head on. So I think this is really something where, there's still a lot of action needed. I mean, I'll also point out that, to this day, there is not an emergency protective standard for workers. OSHA has not put one out there, and the House passed a bill which would do such. But the Senate has not moved on it. So the reality is that, tens of millions of people have lost their jobs. You're talking about, well over 108,000 people losing their lives. And we're still in this position where, you know, we're not where we need to be whatsoever. So I think we really got to focus on dealing with this pandemic right now. And then we also have to, you know, talk about, you know, what we need to do to come back stronger. But the first thing is we got to get a handle on this.
Yeah.
It's very dangerous. Yeah.
And I know one of the things that you and I have talked about over the last couple of months is the HEROES Act. And here's some legislation passed in the House back in the middle of May. And the Republicans came back with just a fraction of that. And now it's a fraction of the fraction. What do we know about it? I guess it's, what, $500 billion package that McConnell is trying to push through? Is that what it is right now?
Yeah, there's several things. One is that it doesn't directly aid state and local governments. And this is a very big problem because state and local governments are on the front lines here. And they're starving of resources because they have had to spend a lot more money because of, you know, obviously because of the health crisis. And they've gotten less money coming in because of the economic slowdown. That and state and local governments don't have the option of borrowing like the federal government, which means that we're going to see serious tax hikes, serious service cuts to essential services I'm talking about here. And it's really going to harm the American people and the economy. So there's nothing there as far as, you know, direct aid to state and local governments. The other thing is that it creates this immunity for companies brought in from lawsuits, from being held accountable for how they handle the COVID crisis. That's the wrong incentive. We don't want that. It doesn't do anything for people who are unemployed and are having trouble paying their COBRA benefits to maintain health care coverage. That's absolutely necessary. Again, people have lost these jobs for no fault of their own. And so it has some ideas which are counterproductive, and overall it's just not on scale with what is needed. And let me also say that the president, you know, put out an executive order which dealt with several things. It had eviction, studying around what to do around eviction moratorium. It gave student debt relief, but here's what's it gives reportedly $300 of UI assistance, which is very hard to administer, instead of extending the $600 that people were getting. But here's a really important thing I want to point out. It also cuts the payroll tax. That is the driver of funding for Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And when asked about it, Secretary Treasurer and others have said, well, we'll borrow from the general fund to pay the difference. In other words, to make sure Social Security is whole. There's no reason to think that will actually happen. So what we're looking at is, if you eliminate the funding source for Social Security, a very healthy Social Security program all of a sudden becomes very unhealthy. In other words, running out of money in just a couple short years. And President Trump has said if he wins a second term, he's going to eliminate that tax altogether. So,
right.
So this is retirement security is very much getting impacted by, you know, these COVID relief measures. So we really got to keep our eye out for that.
Yeah, 2 years, according to the Alliance for Retired Americans, that's how long Social Security will be in effect if they eliminate the payroll tax altogether, as Trump wants to do. That's scary stuff. Scary. And I just wish more people would realize that in America. We talk about it on the show, but beyond that, I mean, I don't think a lot of people get it. Do you?
I don't think it's well understood enough at all. And I think the other thing that's so, a problem with kind of looking at payroll tax cut as a way to deal with this crisis is, If you're not earning a paycheck because you've been laid off, it doesn't do anything for you.
Right.
And there's also, I should mention, it's not an elimination, it's a deferral. So there's a possibility that people will owe the money later and they won't have it.
Yeah. Yeah. The 6.2% that you're talking about, you pay 6.2%, your employer pays 6.2%. So at the end of the year, say January 1, let's just say that Trump does not get reelected, and then on January 1, you'll have to pay the 6.2 plus the 6.2, right?
The employer would the employer part, yes. The employer would probably have to recoup the money too. But absolutely the individual. If there's, you know, these promises of, hey, we'll figure out how to fund Social Security later, are we can't rely on that. And Social Security and Medicare, I just want to remind everyone that, you know, these are insurance programs that we pay into.
Right.
We pay into it. And so, you know, frankly, when you're talking about Social Security, you know, we've seen a real decline in defined benefit plans as attacks of unions has happened and fewer people are in unions. You know, IRAs and things are dependent on the stock market, go up and down big time. You can't really rely on them. So Social Security is what keeps a lot of seniors out of poverty, and not just seniors, but a lot of families. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of kind of jeopardizing the most successful anti-poverty program in the history of the country is really something that we need to focus on.
Yeah. Yeah, I, for the life of me, can't figure out some of these politicians. They call them entitlements. Come on. I mean, you put your money into these programs, just like pensions. The same thing there. You put your heart, when you have a sit down at the bargaining table, you say, okay, instead of taking $2 an hour raise, I'm going to take $1.50, take that 50 cents, put it in retirement for later. Done deal, right? It's still my money, okay? A lot of people just don't understand that.
Absolutely. And it's, and then you hear, the, you know, these kind of attacks. And one of the things that, you know, you'll hear, you know, Majority Leader McConnell talk about why he doesn't like state and local government aid is he'll talk about, you know, he'll talk about how it'll help, you know, it'll deal with people for their pension plans. It'll end up going to people who you know, expect their pension money. They should get their retirement money. They did pay into it. You know, and so you see this double standard again and again when it comes to the super wealthy, when it comes to corporations. You know, tax cuts are the solution, according to, you know, a lot of these anti-labor right-wing politicians. But then when it comes to spending money for the American people, then all of a sudden, you know, we don't have the resources.
No.
So it's really about priorities when you really, really get down to it.
Got about a minute and a half left. What are you hearing about the safety at the UAW facilities around America? Is everybody getting what they need to stay safe on the job? What are you hearing?
People, of course, you know, have concerns. I mean, we have been working really hard, you know, to try to make the environment as safe as possible. And, you know, I think that what's really a concern is besides, you know, we've got to remain vigilant. That's number one. Mm-hmm. And number two is the economics here. You know, what we need to do is we need to just acknowledge that the economy is not going to come bouncing back. People aren't going to be making the purchases and that we need to keep everything moving forward as long as this pandemic is raging. So we just have to deal with this first.
Yeah.
And that will make everything else, you know, so much better. But we're not where we need to be.
And think about what you just said, too, with the economy where it is right now. A lot of that is propped up by the stimulus checks, the $1,200 checks, and the very fact that people have been getting unemployment assistance. Well, that's gone. We've got troubled times ahead here, unless Congress comes up with something that's going to be workable for the American workforce. I'm going to leave it on
that's
that
right.
note. Josh, thank you so much for your sponsorship of the show. I know these times are not easy. Keep going straight forward, and hopefully we'll get through this thing, okay?
Absolutely, as long as we stick together. Thank you so much.
All right.
Take care.
You got it. Keep up the fight. Josh Nasser on behalf of the UAW, UAW.org. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the latest from the progressive populist and labor lawyer Joyce Goldstein. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.